Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the way that Mando kind of looks over at the Grogu.
Like he's surprised.
Yes. Yeah, like what's wrong with him today, you know? What's up and welcome back to Kinda Funny's The Mandalorian Breakdown. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes and I'm joined by the saddest boy I know, Barrett Courtney.
I'm going to have nothing to say. Mm-hmm. For right now.
Okay.
Because what I have to say at the beginning of this is going to be slight spoilers for this episode, but we've got a big guest boy here calling in live from London?
Yes,
somewhere
London.
Somewhere in England.
Star Wars Celebration, right, baby.
From Star Wars Celebration. So I want to give Carboni the stage today before he has to go have a fun evening.
Yeah, because Carboni has not seen this episode yet, but we want to get the straight from the man's mouth. How's it going over there?
It's absolutely wonderful. Celebration was just perfect this year. Couldn't have gone better. I think all the announcements were. I mean, I don't know how it felt from an audience perspective, but I can tell you from up on our stage and watching everything as it happened, just amazing energy and wonderful announcements and just so many wonderful moments.
I mean, yeah, from our end, it was really exciting. Like, you know, reacting to the Ahsoka trailer, talking about all the big stuff that came out from Friday. And then throughout the weekend, just being able to see all the other little updates that just felt like got me more and more hyped and like kind of reinvigorated just like my excitement for Star Wars in the future.
So. A lot of cool stuff, yeah. You know, the movies, the shows, like everything they're talking about, the games, like I'm pretty interested. But dude, you were there, you were on stage. I saw all the pictures first off. You were looking so damn good. Single outfit you had was impeccable. But I want to know what, like, I want you to go off on the, like, humble brag. Who gives a shit? Go for it. Name drop. Do the thing. What are the coolest things that happened to you this week?
I finally got to meet Mon Mothma, our beautiful hero, Genevieve, yes, O'Reilly, and sit and do an interview with her. And she was so brilliant. The entire cast of Andor was wonderful. I got to speak to our boy Cyril.
Cyril Figgis.
Cyril. Kyle he's amazing. Denise Goff, who plays Dedra. Audria, who plays Bix Killeen. We got to hang out a little bit, and they are just the sweetest, most wonderful people. And I'll tell you, everybody who's working on Andor is having the time of their life, and they love each other, and they are... It's funny because, like, we love Andor because it is, like, the most serious, like, character wrenching Star Wars series, but these are some of the fucking funniest people I've ever hung out with in my life.
Hell yeah.
They are hilarious. Gwendolyn Christie came back. I got to talk to Gwendolyn Christie. I got to kiss her on the hand and call her my captain. Ooh.
Classic Carboni.
She's tall. Tall lady.
I heard.
Let's see what else. Oh, I finally got to speak to Ming-Na. Oh my gosh.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that must have been incredible.
Legend. Yeah.
Right beforehand, so we had Emily Swallow come in. It was Emily, Carl, and Giancarlo came out together, and Christina.
No big deal.
Him.
Carl.
I know.
Just, you know, my boy Carl. Carl. Carl fucking Weathers. Apollo Creed.
Sorry. Yeah, Action Jackson came out, and Christina interviewed them, and we had built for everybody to sit around our stage. Like, the round table was the Forge this year, and Sick. The Forge could actually light and, like, give off smoke and fire.
That's really
and
cool.
And so when Emily came up, she grabbed the tools immediately, and they started the Forge going, and it was awesome. And I told Ming-Na about that. I was like, yeah, yesterday, you know, because she was like, this is so cool that you all built this. And props, shout out to the Belgian builders who build our stage every year. They're an amazing crew. But she was really blown away by it. And I was like, yeah, yesterday Emily came and we lit the forge for her and blah, blah, blah. And she turned to me and she goes, so what are you going to do for me? And I looked at her and I looked at her and I grabbed her by the shoulders and I went, I've been a fan of yours since The Single Guy. We will put on whatever you want. I'll do anything you want. And she was like, ooh, that's a good answer. Good answer from you. And you know, I was just like, I don't gush very often with guests because I think it puts off sort of the wrong vibe before an interview. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they want to you want to feel like, hey, we're just two people like doing our job, and I love what you do, but I'm not weird about it. Mm-hmm. But I did get a little weird with Ming-Na. I was just like, yo, you are an inspiration. Everything you've done, I can't believe it. I had the Street Fighter, the movie fighting game for the Saturn.
Fuck yeah.
I was like, and when you beat it, you got that music video and you're in the music video. And she was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. The music video. Tell me why. Tell me why. And I was like,
I love that you had a moment with Ming-Na Wen about the Street Fighter movie video game, like secret ending.
I think without a loss to get that music video. But she was so funny. And you know, she's like the real deal. She and Dave went to the same high school, Filoni. And Dave says, man, if there's anybody who knows as much about Star Wars as I do, it's Ming-Na Wen. And she plays it down, but she knows it all.
Yeah.
She knows it all.
That's
so
awesome.
So that was really fun. I mean, there were a lot of really wonderful moments. I got my picture taken with Gormanda from the Star Wars Holiday Special.
I'm so happy for you. Yeah, that seems
it's
like
canon,
the most up your alley thing possible.
It's very me. I got to see James Arnold Taylor meet Ewan McGregor.
I saw that picture, and that was like a goddamn look at these boys.
James Arnold Taylor, the voice of Tidus from Final Fantasy X, which is the shirt
that I'm
wearing,
but also the voice of Obi-Wan
and Ratchet.
Everybody asked him to do the hello there, but the first time I meet him, I was like, do the Tidus laugh.
Oh my god, he loves that. Don't tell me you asked him that. Oh
yes.
My god.
I was like, you gotta do the Tidus laugh, man. But it was so funny. He came by with a picture of him and Ewan McGregor, you know, after they met, they went and they did the official photo thing, and he came by, and no big deal, but it was me and Christina and some of the crew and Ashley Eckstein all hanging out and taking pictures up on stage.
No big deal.
And James walks by and he's like, look, look. And I looked at him and I go, hey man, you should hold on to that. That autograph's worth at least $200.
God. So did you get to hang out with Dave Filoni?
Dave and John are highly and heavily booked throughout the whole weekend. And they've got, they're still shooting stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But I did get to chat with them a little bit. We had the sweetest little Scottish mom who was our stage manager, Sandy. Shout out Sandy, just the absolute most adorable woman in the world. And she was like, you know, I don't know very much about the Star Wars yet. I haven't watched it, but my boys over the pandemic, they told me that I have to watch the Marvel movies, and I watched them all, and I heard that Jon Favreau is gonna be here. And I was like, yeah. She's like, he's from Iron Man. He made that, he's Happy Hogan. I was like, yeah, he's Happy Hogan. And she's like, and he directed like so many. I was like, yeah, he directed them. She's like, I was like, Sandy, we're going to get you a picture with Jon Favreau. We're going to get you a picture for you to send back to your sons. And he came up and I was like, John, this is Sandy. She has no fucking clue what a Star Wars is. But she and her sons have like sat and watched every Marvel movie recently, and she's in love. And he goes, we got to send a picture of your kids.
We have to send a picture
of your kids. They're going to lose it. Wait until they see this. And it was so wonderful. I got my sister a picture with Ewan McGregor. She only knows two Star Wars characters, the baby, and she doesn't say Obi-Wan. She says, and Ewan McGregor.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
The baby and Ewan McGregor, everyone's favorite Star
Killer
Wars
mustache
characters.
At this celebration. You see the pictures of McGregor? Oh,
powerful.
My gosh.
Powerful.
It's gotta be for a role or something, because he also has like this like wild hair that he had like combed back.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, so it was good. And meeting everybody from the Acolyte, everybody from the Acolyte, they're the real deal. Leslie Headland, who's the showrunner, she did Russian Doll. She is the real deal. She started off writing Star Wars fan fiction when she was a kid.
Hell yeah.
She knows everything. I had 2 minutes with her and we were talking. She's bringing up EU stuff. She's bringing up species that I haven't heard about in years. She's talking about the things that she loves about it. She's it. She's amazing. And the cast are so amazing. Jung Jae Lee, who was the dad in Squid Game, who plays like a Jedi Master that we don't know about yet. And then Ray Stevenson, who of course was Saxon Gar in the Clone Wars, but most people know as the bad guy from RRR. The best movie, one of the best movies.
I figured out what I knew him from, and he's one of Thor's pals in the Thor movies.
He is.
That's so funny.
He's just like one of those big. You hope that Gar Saxon. Sorry, when you see him, you want to be 60 years old. And looking like this dude. He has that most interesting man alive vibe, Ray Stevenson.
Yeah.
He walked up and he was wearing like a linen shirt that's like three buttons unbuttoned and like a cool little chain with like weird charms on it and like rope bracelets, like he's a sailor, but like has he been in a boat? Does he know how to sail? It doesn't matter. He just looks like the coolest old barrel-chested man you've ever seen in your life. And he plays some sort of knight in the Acolyte. Like he says, like, my character certainly has a lightsaber and certainly some sort of Jedi or Sith, but who knows what I am? And I was like, okay, what did you take the inspiration from your character for? We can ask you that without spoilers. And he said, an Arthurian knight. Mm. And I was like, wait, but half of them wound up betraying Arthur. He's like, that's right.
Interesting.
We got Carboni on the streets getting the info straight from the horse's mouth. You'll love to see it.
Yeah.
Carboni, I know you're busy over there in London, so I want to let you go in a sec, but any closing thoughts on your time over at Celebration?
Yeah. It was wonderful to do this over in Europe this year. So many people who haven't been able to go to one because the last few years we've been doing the majority of them in America. Mm. So people haven't been able to make it over, and it was wonderful how many people came up to me and told me it was their first celebration and how much fun they had. It's always amazing to be in that room. And like, let me tell you something, whatever quibbles the internet has, whatever arguments we get into, whatever's going down in the press, no matter what it is, when you're in that room with, 20,000 Star Wars fans, it is just all love and it's all positivity. And you really remember why it is we love it so much. And so it was a really, really beautiful moment. It was a really, really beautiful time. I gave a shout out during my Anthony Daniels feud segment this year. To everybody who's neurodivergent, who sees themselves in droids and why droids are so important to people. And so many people, came up to me afterwards and told me, how much they loved everything, and how much that meant to them. And I met so many people who have chronic pain conditions like I do, who said hello, and they're all walking around on lightsaber canes. And sick. Helping each other out. I got invited to like 15 different groups of people who are like Star Wars fans that deal with chronic pain or Star Wars fans that deal with like neurodivergence. And like, it's just a wonderful community. And I'm so excited that we all get to be a part of it. Star Wars is so fucking wonderful.
Hell y'all. Yeah.
And I can't wait to be in fucking Japan in 2025, woo! Baby.
So cool, man.
Thing in my favorite place. Let's go.
Love that, man. All right. You have a great night. I know you have a fancy dinner to get to. I want to hear all about that. But watch this episode as soon as you can, Carboni.
Oh, as soon as you can.
It's a good one.
I'll probably be texting you on the plane tomorrow as I'm watching it.
I love it. All right, man.
All right, y'all.
Have a great time. Gotta love that guy. Anthony Carboni, one of the best of us.
He is one of the best of us.
I'm going to get into the rigmarole now.
I know, he is still here.
This is the Kind of Funny screencast. Of course, every single week, youtube.com/kindoffunny. We're breaking down The Mandalorian. Only one to go. The finale next week. But of course, we'll be here with the full crew. It's going to be me, Barrett, Carboni, and Sage. All of us giving our thoughts on the finale of season 3 of The Mandalorian. You can get it on youtube.com/kindoffunny, roosterteeth.com as a video. If you want to get it as a podcast, search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny screencast, and we will be right there for you. If you want to get the show ad-free, though, you got to go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers, Tripod Plus Plus, James Hastings, Casey Andrew, Nathan Lamoth, and Al Tribesmen have done. We appreciate all of you so very, very much. Because of your support over on Patreon, you are not going to have to hear our sponsor reads, but for everyone else, here is one. Shout out to Rocket Money for sponsoring this episode. We all love gobbling up content, and we have an understanding of what subscriptions we use. Or do we? Do you know how much your subscriptions really cost? Most Americans think they spend around $80 a month on subscriptions when the actual total is closer to $200. That's right. You out there. You could be wasting hundreds of dollars each month on subscriptions you don't even know about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending and it helps you lower your bills all in one place. Rocket Money has saved some of us here at Kind of Funny a ton of money, and it can help you too. Stop throwing away your money. Cancel unwanted subscriptions and manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. That's rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. So here we are, Barrett. The penultimate episode of The Mandalorian season 3. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I hear you did too. I want to let you go off. What did you think about this episode?
Tim, you might remember, ever since we've started covering Star Wars together in an episodic format, based off of the streaming platform Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when we're reviewing things weekly, I like to start the episode of our review covering whatever we're covering, whether it's Bad Batch, Book of Boba Fett, Mandalorian Season 2, what have you. I like to try to
Kenobi,
Andor. I like to try to start off the episode with a quote from the episode. And you might be wondering, well, Barrett, where have you been this entire season with Mandalorian? You haven't been doing that. Some would say, I forgot. But some would say, others would say, maybe it's the season's fault a little bit, because no quote has stood out to me as being important enough to start an episode off with. Tim, I've got a quote for you today.
I have one too.
Tim, your song has not been written. I will serve you until it is.
My quote for you, based on that, is yes, 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 yes. What a great quote, man. That shit was fucking awesome.
They were in the writers team in their bag here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, continue going off though. What do you think of this episode?
I thought this was fantastic. You know, we've been, you know, the last month it felt like every week we're kind of coming in here having different types of fun each week. Maybe, you know, fun in like the goofy, like this was not a great episode, but still, you know, trying to ride the wave sorts of way. But every week it felt like this season has had a problem focusing on what it wants to do. And this episode kind of just said, no, here it is. Here it is. We promise we were building up to something. And it really reminds me, or not reminds me, it really made me think of the fact that a lot of the interesting stuff from this season was a lot of the subtext. What's going on in the background? What's going on with the universe as a whole? And I think my biggest problem with this season so far is that I wish that subtext was just more of the text rather than Lizzo and Jack Black being the text, right? And here we finally get the encompassing what we've been building to a little bit subtly in the background, a little bit not so subtly. And the way everything came to a head this week going into the finale for next week, this is the first week where I'm like, I need this next episode now.
Yeah.
Like right now. And so, yeah, I absolutely adored this episode.
I'm right there with you where it's like, this is the first time that I'm excited for next week in a way that I'm like, oh shit, what is going to go down? I am also disappointed we only have one left. Like this is an episode that I think is difficult to talk about because I'm very high on it, very positive on it. I just wish that this is what The Mandalorian was more.
Yeah.
And I'm more consistently and in a better paced kind of flow.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I beat the dead horse 1,000 times. The Boba Fett in between seasons 2 and 3 of Mandalorian, that weird kind of story pacing has continued throughout this season.
Yep.
And I'm not too against it because I'm here for the Star Wars every week. I'm here for just getting a little bit. It doesn't
getting little adventures.
I'm cool with that stuff because like I get what they're building. It was clear from episode 1 of this season. Like, all right, cool. They're getting the Mandalorians together.
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to do that? I don't know. And they ended up doing it in kind of the most basic, obvious way possible of just like, yeah, we're going to go and just ask them. And then they're all going to join us. And like, there was something anticlimactic of them all getting together. In this episode?
Oh, see, I didn't think of it as anticlimactic. I felt it as tense.
Yeah?
And so, oh, yeah, because that wasn't like a them coming together this episode didn't feel like the, oh, we've done it, and all these different tribes are together, and it feels so good. It's like they're not quite there yet, and that's what it read to me like, is that, so, like, especially when Bo shows up with her fleet, you know, being the new leader, kind of taking her people back under her wing again, and they all show up on Nevarro. And, like, all of them just take off their helmets, almost feeling, like, in spite of, like, being,
look
like,
at us,
fuck you, like, we're, you know, like, we're us. And I felt that tension throughout the entire episode. So, yeah, I didn't feel like this big, like, holy shit, they're all together. It was like a, all right, things are shaky, and, like, maybe they come together eventually. I wonder if that's what next week's episode is going to be with, you know, the stakes that are going into the finale of, like, all right, this is the crew, and they're figuring their shit out. Some people are sacrificing themselves to save, you know, people from the other side of the Mandalorian. Like, I think we might get that next week.
No, totally, totally. And sorry, to be clear, I'm not talking about the moment of them getting together and, oh, it's all working. I'm literally talking about them all being together. Like,
gotcha.
It just kind of feels like, it feels rushed as hell of like, boom, okay, cool, now we're together. Why are they together? To face who? What? Oh, Moff Gideon's back. Guess what? It's the end of a Mandalorian season.
I think,
he's going to be here.
Yeah, and like,
but it's the problem is that that's the exciting stuff, though. It's like, once he's here, it's like, wow, the quality of the story going on in this episode, I'm like, this is fucking cool as shit. Like, everything going on with the Praetorian Guard and all that, like, we're seeing the rise into what will eventually become the sequel trilogy. And, like, we've seen this coming. We've seen the hints of them talking about all the cloning stuff. But it is at its head now. It just, I feel a little frustrated that it kind of feels like, what's going to happen in Mandalorian Season 4? Some story, and then the last two episodes, Moff Gideon's going to come back. It's like, it feels weird that, like, this just keeps happening
again,
over
like,
and over and over.
Like I was saying, I felt like the subtext for the first 6 episodes of the season should have been the text. Let's introduce Bo's side of the Mandalorian and what they're doing a little bit earlier. Let's make all of that build up to Bo being their commander again a little bit earned. Let's not do an episode where Bo's just kind of, life is hard, and then kind of a completely 180, like,
immediately.
immediately. And like, I could see the trajectory they wanted to go on, and I was on board for that. It was just, I don't feel like they knew the interconnective tissue to get from point A to point B, which, yes, is frustrating. It's why I do think overall this season of The Mandalorian, I think, is the weakest season so far. But with that said, I tweeted this out last night. I think last night's episode is the best episode of the series.
Ooh, I wouldn't go that far, but I do think it's high up there. I agree with you that I think this is probably the
top
least,
three
least good. Top three. Yeah, fuck it. Why not? You know, actually, I'm so torn, man. I'm just like, because I feel like they have everything in place now. I need to see what they're going to do with it, though. Like, getting all the Mandalorians together, I still just feel like they're kind of table setting in a way that am I cool? Now she has the Darksaber. Bo is like the leader. It seems like she's going to be. Let's talk about this for a second. The armor is totally a fucking bad guy. I went back on it, reneged on it in the last couple episodes. This episode's called The Spies. Who had the horns? When we see the reveal of Giancarlo's character having the dark, wearing the dark thing, having the thing, I'm like, oh, they're fucking working together.
Yeah, and then she did volunteer to take the Sith ones back to the fleet.
Which,
but
why,
like,
would
what
she do that?
Why did? What does she gain from being like?
I don't know. They'll figure it out and tell us next
week. Or maybe like, fuck, man. Yeah, that's. That's a thread that I did not think about, because granted, I'm watching this episode at midnight and pausing every couple minutes to take notes on a bunch of other stuff. So naturally, I'm not going to be able to catch everything. But yeah, that's an interesting thread. That's really, really cool. See, I just took it like the, you know, because we also have what's her face. I actually had to go into like looking up character names, because I knew we were probably not going to have Carbone today. So I wanted to not just be like, oh, the lady, Alaya Kane on Coruscant, like,
killing the game, dude.
Oh my god. Yeah, start off that episode. My first note is, fuck, I love Coruscant. Coruscant's so
rad,
cool,
man. And they're using it so well in these shows. Like, I feel like they're giving a new life to Coruscant, and like in every single one, getting the different perspectives of, okay, we've seen the Jedi Temple stuff. Now we're getting some of the ground level. Then we get the apartments in Andor and all that stuff. It's like they're doing a really good job using Coruscant in a post-original trilogy way that I think is going to add up to a much stronger version of the future once we get there.
And then why do we think eventually will we ever get the story of why the base of the New Republic changes systems, right? Because we know it's not Coruscant by the time Cassian of course. System. Yeah. So maybe that's a story that's explored eventually. Maybe. Some cool stuff potentially there.
But I do think it was interesting, sticking with the Coruscant iconography and stuff, when we get the, I forgot if they named them, but kind of like, hey, we're all the bad guys, and like we're still with the Empire, and we're doing the hologram thing.
Yeah.
Like, I like that they were all in a circle, and it felt very much like the Jedi Council.
Yeah.
Cool shit.
There's a lot of reflective, I think they're called like the Shadow like Collective or something like that. They say it once and it's like, just in my head in that moment, I was like, at one point they sat down and were like, what do we fucking name ourselves? What's something cool, you know? But even before that meeting, because all of this is happening before even the title card hits, right?
Yeah.
First like 9 minutes in this episode is popping off. I just want to, I took a moment to be like, damn, probe droids are huge. You never really see one up close next to a human, but then when that probe droid, who's Moff Gideon getting in contact with, Alaya, it's like, goddamn, that thing is big. It was a little scary.
It was a little scary.
Intimidating. But yeah, I like that that's the transition to get us to, Moff Gideon's hanging out somewhere in a secret base somewhere.
Walking through with the fucking episode one red walls.
The sick laser grid, dude. In my notes here, like, that was very Phantom Menace vibes, which, like, we don't use enough.
We just don't.
Maybe if we overuse it, maybe it loses its meaning. But yeah, the fact, like, we can say what we want about Phantom Menace, but like that fight sequence with Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon Jinn, Darth Maul, very cool.
The duel
and
the
light,
fates.
And then the light grid itself also brought in some cool tension, and I love that they're adding things on there. And then like with these new looking first, like early version of First Order troops,
with
dude,
Beskar armor,
with Beskar armor,
like all that shit. It's like, again, this show at I think most points when it's good is like, hey, fuck it, let's just have fun with Star Wars. Yeah. And like, they're doing that in such a cool way with the Dark Trooper stuff, and then like now these new troopers that they have, they were cool. And the action scenes in this episode were like really fucking fun.
Definitely up the ante from last week's kind of like awkward looking Mando fight with Bo and Act. But yeah, that moment of him walking and passing all of the new looking stormtroopers with the Beskar armor, and I had to pause to like really look at it, like, yeah, it looks a little bit more bulky like the First Order, and it just like really took me back of like, it's been a long time since season one where you had like the scientist meeting up with Werner Herzog with like the really dusty old stormtrooper look of like, they've really been building up something new for the last couple of years, and they're up to some shit. And also, you know, Gideon walking past some interesting back to tank
boys.
I don't know if they're Snoke anymore.
I mean, it has to be. The Praetorian guards involved.
That's true. That's okay. Yeah. Or you know what? I'm getting it like kind of mixed up with like maybe cloning Palpatine, but because he says at one point, like, I'm not interested in cloning.
Yeah.
And that I find interesting.
There was two things that were said, and I need to rewatch this episode, man. There was a lot.
There's a lot.
Because we get the Thrawn drop here, right?
Second time we've heard his name in the show.
When they're all talking about it, but they bring up Project Necromancer.
Which is like, is that a project to bring Palpatine back?
And then they brought, there was two things. There was Project Necromancer, and then someone in the chat, help me out here. There was one other thing that I was like, okay, maybe they are two different aligned things, where there's Palpatine and Snoke. Or maybe the Snoke project just is attempts at Palpatine.
Yeah, and like, and again, who knows of like the resources that Gideon is using to make his secret projects. Do the rest of them know exactly what he's trying to do with if he's really a part of this Snoke plan? Does Thrawn really know what he's up to? We kind of theorized this a little bit talking about the Ahsoka trailer of like, all right, it seems like Gideon might be in leagues with Thrawn, but are they really truly serving the same full goal? And I think it's a very interesting of like, we might see a lot of infighting in the early stages of the First Order. Like, maybe this is Thrawn's thing that he's trying to do with Heir to the Empire type of stuff. But then, because Gideon calls out, he's like, where's Thrawn? Where is this guy? Yeah. He's never shown up to fucking meetings. I think it's time for new leadership. Who's he talking to? Yeah.
Hux.
General Hux.
General fucking Hux.
The father of little angry Weasley Hux from the sequel trilogy.
And the actor's the brother of...
Yeah, the actor is the brother of Domhnall Gleeson, which is really, really adorable. I love little stuff like that.
This episode, though, I mean, like, there's been hints in seasons 1, 2, and even a little bit in 3 of the sequel connections. This was the one that just burst the door down, right? The blast doors are open. It's like, yo, we're connecting to the sequels. We're going to try to make as much sense of this as we possibly fucking can.
Yep.
And it was just relentless. I feel like every 5 minutes, there was some new element that like was like, oh, this is tying together. This is tying together.
And this is what we've been building to. Yeah. Like, we're being very upfront of like, we're trying to contextualize the sequels. And so, yeah, I loved the quote of the return of Grand Admiral Thrawn will herald in the reemergence of our military.
Yes, fucking will.
But yeah, I love the possible infighting. I also love that when Gideon walks in, they're already in the middle of their meeting, and they're kind of, the other lieutenants are coming in and strategizing. One wants to kind of take over this hyperspace lane to like start looting, and then the other kind of pushes it back against that and says, we want to come across as unorganized warlords and not a collective unit somewhere along those lines. Mirroring, taking it back to Andor, the early parts of Skarsgård trying to make all of his little plans of building a rebellion all feel like noise. And that's what the blonde lady is trying to figure out. Dedra is trying to figure out of like, she's kind of seeing through it and seeing like, oh no, there's a pattern here.
Yeah.
And I love that into this stage of the early New Republic trying to get its shit together, definitely being spread too thin, definitely falling back into failings of the Empire and the Old Republic. The people who survived and are remnants of the Empire and are there for the cause, right? You know, like, they're like, yeah, we love, you know, space fascism. It's really cool. We want to bring it back. The fact that they're learning and using strategies from the rebellion is like, holy shit, man. Like, that was one of my, like, weirdly get hype moments of like, oh shit, like, they're learning from each other, and it's a kind of complete flip from the era of the Empire. I don't know.
We've been seeing that in the last couple episodes of Mando. Yeah. It's like, it's funny because it's like we just have expectations for this and we see them pull it off sometimes. Like, I feel like there have been like maybe DC subtext plots like you're talking about going on this season that are like, this kind of reminds me of Andor, of what I like most about it. And it is these like the looks at the New Republic and the failings of it already, where it's like, oh, they are acting more like the Empire did, right? And then now we see the Empire, and they're acting like, and this shot, again, going back to the Jedi Council of it all, like, that was intentional. And them ending it saying, long live the Empire, as the fucking, a dark Mando theme plays, and it just says, the spies. I was like, no. Hell yeah, dude. God.
And then, of course, like, we get into Bo returning with her people. I love the little interaction with Carl Weathers and his droid, and the droid's like, they're Empire. He's like, no, it's been repurposed. If you look at the thing, like, it's fine. It's, trust me, bro, trust me. And we get, Bo bringing her people back to the remnants of Death Watch, and them kind of coming together, there being tension, and then, all right, we're going to go on this expedition to Mandalore. I want to bring down we're going to bring our fleet, and then I want to bring down a small team to, like, go onto the surface and, like, do some reconnaissance, and if we can secure the forge, we'll slowly bring in everybody else and try to figure it out. And then, like, half of the people volunteer.
I love it, dude. That was a hype moment of, like, that was them. Yeah. Kind of being like, yo, we are Mandalorian.
I will go.
Yeah.
I will go.
Good for
y'all. It was cool, but it then eventually was like, Okay, she asked for like a small team. Like I like we appreciate the volunteers, but like we really only need like maybe 10 people. Like I just thought it was fun.
So, Kevin, you're here listening, right?
Yep.
So, I know every once in a while you hear us talk about Mandalorian, a show you're not watching,
That's true.
Like, "What the fuck?" Like are they making these things up? Because some of the things...
I'm gonna be totally honest. Last week was real hard like to believe that that was the truth.
But it was the truth.
It was.
What if I told you, Kevin, that they had to go to Mandalore. You know where I'm going with this. They had to go to Mandalore. And like Mandalore's kind of like, there's poison in this stuff. It's a little dangerous, right?
I know about Mandalore.
They've been like kind of like teasing and building on like what's Grogu going to do? And they tried to kind of get IG-11. Remember IG-11 Taika Waititi's droid?
Well, yeah,
he died. They tried to resurrect him, and it didn't really work.
And then he turned
work.
Into a murder bot. It was a murder. Really scary scene.
It was a whole thing.
Yeah.
The solution that they revealed last night was to hollow out his belly and to make him a mech suit Grogu rides.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That
he's
sense.
He's IG-12 now, and Grogu gets to
use. Is that
use
how that works?
That's
what
Carl
they call
Weathers
now.
Said.
Which is like what happened? Like so, like IG-88, like.
IG-11.
Like, no, IG-88 is, like, from the original one, right?
Yeah.
So how does he, like, are we going to get there eventually?
I don't know. Who the fuck knows?
Because this is happening after that, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Grogu's here with his little mech, and he has two buttons. One button says yes.
Yes.
And one says no.
So it's like Ninja Turtles.
Straight up.
That's wild.
So, yeah.
And honestly, like, this is the weirdest, like, the standout weird thing of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I was sold by it. I fucking loved it.
It was endearing as shit.
Because, you know, you've been talking about the last two seasons of how Grogu is a little shit.
Yeah.
And, like, this just enhances that in a new way that, like, he can actually, like, interact with the world, have some agency in stuff. Like, they kind of pay it off in a weird, like, not in a weird way, but in a way that hit me, right? Where later on when they're, like, when the surviving Mandalore who've been abandoned on the planet are, like, rolling up with their cool fucking pirate ship, and they're like, hey, we can take you to the Forge, and they're rolling up, and then, Vizsla and Axe have that fight, and then Din is like, hey, like, should we do something? And Bo's like, no, neither side can, like, interfere right now. It's just between them. And Grogu's the one who fucking stops them and goes, no.
Yeah.
And I when you fucking write it on paper, I'm like, that sounds stupid as hell. But when you put it in action, I'm like, fucking hell yeah.
Yeah, it was fun, man. I also loved the
mech
name.
Suit to eat snacks. That's right.
He straight up did use the mech suit to access and eat more snacks.
And Kevin, let me tell you that the way that they delivered the IG-12 unit to Grogu is the Azelans, the Babu Frick guys, were the ones who made it for him. And one of the Azelans rides up to
and then he goes, bad baby, no squeezy. What the fuck is this show?
It's so good. And the way the Azelan crawls off of the IG-12 unit, fucking hilarious. I don't know, man. It's dumb, but it's good Star Wars dumb. And I just want to shout out Carl Weathers. He also felt like he was having a lot of fun in this
episode. So much fun.
Before we get to the fucking real stuff that's happening.
Carl Weathers had another great Mando in this one, so shout out to him for that.
Mando, he brought him a little Coruscant liquor. I liked that.
Yep. And something that I've been really appreciating about the Disney era of Star Wars, like Rogue One had a bit of this, and then pretty much every show has it, every season has at least one moment of having the camera like on a spaceship and having that ship go either from surface to space or space to surface in like one shot,
yeah,
and like going through the atmosphere and shit. And I feel like this one had a really cool shot of that, of them like going in. And it was like, damn, this is
and impressive. Like, even right before
Disney
that, when they like arrive to Mandalore coming out of like hyperspace, the way like each ship hits, like boom, 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 like that really stood out to me. Like, I know we've seen that before in Star Wars, but I think just like the one big one and all the little ones popping in, there was something about that. I was like, god damn.
This episode just felt. It felt like season finale shit. And it's not season finale, but it had that kind of like, oh, this.
The weight to it.
They're putting budget into this.
Oh, like, yeah.
This,
like
this
seeing
is
all
one.
The ship and the details with everything, especially when we get into the secret new First Order layer and you see like the TIE what is it? Not Interceptor. The TIE Fighters, but the TIE Defenders?
Interceptor. Defender and Interceptor, I think, were the two in there.
Seeing, like, just the details on them, I was like, oh, we're getting some budget for this episode. It's nice. But, yeah, they get onto the planet after, like, a shaky kind of, like, entrance because, yeah, it's, like, surrounded by this, like, eternal storm in the kind of, like, just outside the atmosphere, it seems. I don't know, like, how they're going to get everybody else down on the planet if they ever secure Mandalore, right? Because it was like, it felt like luck just getting that one ship down, but whatever. And then, yeah, we meet up with some surviving Mandalorians who've just been living here since, and I know what you might be saying here. Amongst their rank, Kevin, Skinny Pete from Breaking Bad is a fucking Mandalorian. Are you kidding me? Let's fucking go, dude. I had to wait. I was like, is that him? I haven't seen him in anything in 10 years. Breaking Bad ended 10 years ago. I guess he was in El Camino, whatever, what have you. And I had to wait for the credits to see if it was, I believe his name is Charles Baker. And it was.
It is. Yeah, Charles Baker.
That's fucking awesome.
And I can't confirm this right now, but I think that one of the other one of those, the Mandalorian that were with Skinny Pete,
yeah.
Is the dude from Top Gun Maverick that like believed in Maverick.
Oh, shit.
Like, where he's just like, yes, like yeah, when he finally makes it. Oh God, so
oh,
good.
God, really?
Yeah.
Tim, no, that he hasn't seen Maverick.
I know.
Right? I know. I need to watch the first one, either. But I also need to watch Creed really, 2 and 3, and then I need to watch John Wick 2, 3.
No. I'm telling you right now, you out of that list, you only need to watch Maverick.
Like legitimately, like
let's go to Tim's house. Paula hasn't seen it either. She needs to watch it right, and there's only one way to do that.
Yeah, big. But yeah, the homies in that, so
that's awesome. Yeah, I loved their weird little their pirate ship. I know someone in this in the comments saying they're not First Order yet. I know that, but this is the first iteration, and it's very clear with the stormtrooper armor, what we're gonna see of the Praetorian Guard later on. Like that is the very early remnants of the Praetorian Guard that we see in The Last Jedi.
Yep.
And it's fucking sick as hell.
It really is.
And so they're taken to the forge below ground, kind of like, yeah, underneath like the weird glass that like was made by all the bombing. And I think a little bit before that, actually, we get the great moment where, you know, Din is like really like, yo, like I will serve you until the end. And I got some simp vibes and I really loved it. Like, in my headcanon, I love the fact that like maybe Din has a little bit of a crush on Bo-Katan. And I think that's pretty neat.
I loved some of the lines of dialogue during this little bit of him being like, what means more to me is honor and loyalty and character. You taught me about this blade. I don't know what I am. You're the one that gives it importance. Like, it's like, that was so good. And like,
this blade means nothing to me, man.
Yeah.
And like, he only respected the rules because, again, maybe he's got a crush on Bo-Katan. And it's like, oh, my crush says it's really important that I can't just gift it to her. So I don't know. I guess I got to keep it. and then let's see here. Yeah, this is where I wrote down a Skinny Pete a Mando. Yes, confirmed. And then, yeah, we get the moment where the armor takes the sick crew back to the fleet because some of the surviving pirate Mandos are not doing well. They're looking for food. They're like kind of starving. And yeah, I find it interesting that you're getting the vibe. And I saw some of the chat getting the vibe that she is.
Armor.
She's like selling people out, and I mean,
this episode's called The Spies.
I know.
So that could literally just be what we saw in the opening scenes with Alaya.
But there's always a double
two.
Meaning.
There's always two. Yeah. So yeah, I think at this
that
point
that bums me out. I wanted her to be a friend. I know there's the expectation of like maybe she's the main villain for this season that we were talking about very early on, and I liked more of like maybe she's not that. And so it'll be interesting to see like what her end goal was here.
Yeah.
Like maybe she wanted. Maybe her secret desire is to not actually reunite the other Mandalorian, but to gather them to kill them all. That isn't part of her Death Watch cult. That's insane.
There's a lot that they could do.
That's like the plot to The Force Unleashed, Tim.
Oh,
if you
right.
remember,
yeah.
Of like Vader has a secret little apprentice, and he's like, gather people who are enemies of the Empire and make a like a sweet little rebellion. And then his secret apprentice actually gets invested, and then Vader still comes in. And it's like, my secret plan all along wasn't to start a rebellion against the Emperor. It was to bring all of our enemies together and fucking kill them in one blow. Fucking Christ, man.
Yeah, I mean, that might be happening. So there's something I want to bring up, but I want to, let's get through
theory.
The episode
I know,
and start
I know.
Theorizing about the next one. Because
yep.
Things start getting real, real here, right? We get to Mandalore, where we have a lot of the characters together now, and then there's the big reveal that Moff Gideon has a base on Mandalore, and it's totally like,
well, like before we even see that, because there's the buildup to it, right? And I love this, is that, you know, we see some in the distance. Are those Mandalorians flying down? Are those more? And no, it's straight up. It's stormtroopers. They realize that it's stormtroopers with Beskar armor. No one said they fly now.
Yeah,
which I was really disappointed by. And I also wanted one of them to say they wear Beskar now.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, that entire fight scene, really, really cool. And then when they start advancing, when like I think it's Din who says, like, advance or someone, and the music that, dude, like, builds up with, like, this really dark but, like, big, big version of the Mandalorian theme was dope as hell. And, of course, Grogu coming up the rear in his little IG-12 unit. Very scared for him this entire time.
Yeah.
But and
the musically, sticking on that for a sec, the buildup of this, of, like, the big theme and, like, the action set piece feeling, like more than what we're used to on these shows, it culminating in the Paz Vizsla fight and getting a song that's reminiscent of Duel of the Fates, and they just fucking went for it.
Yeah.
Man. They're like, yo, we want you to feel the things, and you're going to. I thought they did such a good job with the choreography of all this.
And I love, as they advance, you start, because, you know, Mandalore's messed up, and everything is, like, broken down and old and grimy. Sort of, like, the remnants that are still around are definitely, like, remnants of, like just of bombing, right? And so they start advancing on these troopers through this cave system, and you start getting little hints of, like, wait,
what's that?
That technology looked newer and is actually operational. What's going on here? And then they're led into a hangar of a full-on secret early First Order remnant base.
Sick.
That we kind of realize that's where Gideon was at the very beginning of the episode, and now you understand why he's concerned about the Mandalorians coming to try to take back Mandalore. And you're like, oh,
it all
shit.
Connects.
It's so good. And then you also get the connection of, like, why was there Beskar armor in the ship that Gideon got broken out of? And my thought was like, oh, maybe the bow people who were being hired as hired guns, maybe they're hired for it. And then you're like, no, fucking stormtroopers with Beskar armor. That's why. And again, I love that the little subtext starting to finally pay off in this episode. But
we totally skipped the big kaiju fight. Jon Favreau and Filoni love these fucking kaiju fights in this.
Oh, we did. Oh, right? My God. That was in this episode.
There was a lot.
It was a lot, and it looked sick as hell. And I love, like, Tim, I thought Tail Whip was just a move used to kind of, like, slow your opponent down. But this motherfucking kaiju uses his tail and completely knocks out the pirate Mandalorian ship. And I was like, no, it looks so cool. And the way it explodes, you see some Mandalorians taken out. Holy crap, I loved that.
This is a cool-ass episode, yes. Man.
Again, some would say the best of the series. And then, so yeah, we get this whole reveal, and all of the Mandalorians are kind of taken aback because they assume that, like, no one's really been doing anything here. But then we get the kind of big reveal of, like, no, they've been building on this thing for a few years. And just the tension, where Bo kind of gets a couple of steps back, and then the doors close. And the only people left in the hangar are Din and unnamed characters who get taken out, like, almost immediately. And it's Din against up these, like, other stormtroopers with this Beskar material, and they're pinning him down. He's trying to use his flamethrower to, like, set him up on fire. And then we get the reveal of Moff Gideon with his own stormtrooper Beskar armor
flying down.
Definitely got, like, Darth Vader vibes a little bit. With, like, the voice modulator.
And he's always had the chest thing, too.
But now the chest thing doesn't look awkward with the, like, rest of his suit. It always kind of looked awkward with what he wanted it. And then this was, like, you know, he was building his, his little film studio in parts, right? Like you did, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's finally coming together where you're at right now, where you're like, it's finally come together. It's finally looking good. And, yeah, it kind of looks like the character we were talking about, Gar Saxon.
Mm.
It kind of looks like his Mandalorian stuff from Clone Wars Season 7, which I found very interesting because it felt like a little bit more Maul-inspired back then. But so other people pointed out, he's got little horns. You know who else has horns?
The armor.
Which is, like, freaking me out a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a cool theory, but it makes me sad.
This scene was incredible. Like, Mando getting taken out by them and, like, being pinned down, it was like there was an actual fear to the point that, this is kind of where I'm at here, where I was saying I want to talk about theorizing.
Mm.
I don't think they're going to do it. But are they going to kill Mando? Like, was this just all a fucking thing just to get Bo where she needs to be and just fucking kill him? I don't think they're going. They can't. They need the Mandalorian for the movie, man.
Let me get through some of the other stuff here, and I'll respond to that. Sad Grogu when he sees Din on the other side of the glass made me very sad.
Yep.
Gideon being like, this is the perfected warrior armor. You want to know why? Because it has me in it. Big eye roll there. Whatever, Gideon. You're like a wimpy little dude outside of that. Yeah, he really wants the Darksaber back. And we learned a little bit more about the context of like why he had the Darksaber, like back in season one. Like the struggle that Bo went through, like in the last couple of years of the Empire. Really sad stuff, and you really understand like why she's had this chip on her shoulder of like actually earning that. But again, you have the whole conversation of Din being like, you're only giving that importance because of whatever made up fairy tale. Like, these are the real things that are important. We get a little bit of Gideon's real kind of science experiment that he wants, where he wants to make the perfected soldier of a like mix between a Jedi and a Mandalorian.
Yeah,
which is like,
all right. I guess because it's what the show is, so.
Yeah, but then does that turn into weird Snoke people? That maybe that's what Gideon wants as a new leader, because they know as an empire, they need to have someone like that as a leader. So he makes that, but then maybe, Palpatine gets a little bit of understanding of like, oh, that's happening? I'm going to take that over. That's my project now, and that's... Yeah, I'll just use that as the face for my First Order bullshit.
We'll fucking see.
We'll see.
They'll explain it, or they won't.
And I just love the line, in a few moments, the purge of Mandalore will be complete. That was almost the other quote that I used at the beginning. And then we get the big sacrifice.
Paz Vizsla.
John Favreau. Taking one for the team. Yeah, John Favreau, rest in peace in the show. Getting everybody out. Bo uses the Darksaber to get everybody out, but they had already dragged Din away. Din is, like, captured. Paz has, like, this fight with other stormtroopers. I love that, at one point his super cool Gatling gun breaks.
Dude.
It's like, well, I'm the weapon now, bitch. And it just starts
clobbering
people.
Break. It, like... He just won't stop shooting it, and it just heats up, and you see it slowly get engulfed in, like, laser flame? I don't know, but it was fucking cool.
It was really cool. And then he just starts going after each one, and, he finally does it, and he, like, throws the last two off the edge, and you're like,
video game, dude.
Yeah, it felt very video gamey, and then you have that moment where, like, oh, is he just about to get out of this? Like, are they not committing? And then... the early version of the the red fucking guarded people from specifically the designs of The Last Jedi, very early versions, not the same helmets, but...
Same weapons, though.
Early versions of the weapons.
Whips and shit? Oh my god, dude.
And they
was
start
so
taking
cool.
this dude down, and the way they kill him was brutal.
Brutal.
As brutal as they can be for whatever PG-13 Disney Plus.
I don't know how much
but
more brutal
they
could go.
But the way that they're stabbing him, like, they're not showing the body horror and, like, bleeding out, but the way they stab him was just like, goddamn. And then they just walk off, and it fades to black, and that's the episode, Tim.
Yeah, man. And then they did the thing where the credits weren't completely silent, but it was essentially silent.
Yeah.
Normally we get the, like, more bombastic Mando shit, and this was just kind of concept art, letting us sit with what we
Jared Myers points out in the chat, just stabbing through Beskar, too. Was insane. Like, lightsabers can't do that.
I didn't expect to see those guys show up and... be the way that they were.
I know.
It was impressive. Like, again, this is like, oh shit, like, this is what
the Mandalorian can be. Gideon, like, ask for them at the beginning of the episode, but yeah, you didn't think that was going to be the exact payoff. Like, that was insane. So, to go back to your thing of, like, are they about to kill Din?
I don't think they are either. It's just, like,
I think
the
this
way
is more going to reflect or mirror, because everything has to rhyme in Star Wars, right? In season two, right? Grogu gets kidnapped by Gideon, and then Din goes, brings the team together to go save him. I think this will be Grogu's IG-12 moment where his dad gets taken by Gideon, and now, maybe there's some infighting with the Mandalorian still of, like, you guys fucked this up. No, you guys fucked this up. Why? How have you guys survived on this planet for the last 12 years? All this infighting, and then maybe Grogu goes, no.
Yeah, again.
And brings the team together and goes and saves his dad. I would love that. But we'll have to see, man. Because
one ep left, man, and we're in an interesting place where it's like there's an obvious path forward, but I feel like how we get there and where we go from there, it doesn't feel like there's a season finale ahead of us. You get what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, like, what what are going to be the events that happen that are like, holy shit, that's the end point. Then we're moving on next. Like where we're at now kind of feels more that way to me.
Yeah.
So I'm just interested in the characters of where they're going to be, because now that Paz Vizsla is dead, we don't have many people to connect with in a leadership capacity from that side of the Mandos besides the armor.
And if she's a spy, yeah.
Then it's like, it just kind of puts them in a weird place. And then the death, or not Death Watch. Is it Death Watch? Whatever the fuck they are.
They do say of like, they are like remnants of Death Watch. Like Death Watch
Sasha
is no longer
them, right?
Yeah.
Like we have them, we have Bo obviously being like with the Darksaber and leader. Do you think that by the end of next episode, Bo still has the Darksaber?
Yes. And I that's personally just what I want, because I don't want more Darksaber jumping around.
I'm right there with you.
She's got it.
It's in her hands.
It's her weapon. It's in her hands. I just say just stick with it. So, yeah, that's, man. Yeah, I'm fascinated to see what next week's is going to look like. And, yeah, if they're set up even for a season four, like I think there was mention, right, or you were saying on the Ahsoka Reacts thing that maybe they're, you know, they do have a plan to end for Mandalorian as a show. What does that look like? Do they kill Din here and then the rest of the show becomes Bo-Katan? Like, the Mandalorian title can mean many different things, like each episode title does. So the Mandalorian did start out as the Mandalorian Din Djarin, but that can evolve over time of the meaning of that. It could mean Bo-Katan. It could mean Boba Fett. It could mean Sabine Wren. It could mean them as Grogu. A collective. It could mean Grogu and my little Babu Frick friend right here, the Azelan. It can mean a lot of things. And I think with that, like, and it's like each episode title, there's always a double meaning. So, I'm back at the point where it's like, I'm on the ride, and I think I'm at this point going to enjoy it no matter what. Unless,
speaking of ride,
unless we get Lizzo Jack Black return next episode.
You think she's going to ride the Mythosaur next week?
No. Maybe. For a second, I was like, but the Mythosaur's on another planet. But no, they're back on Mandalorian. Fucking maybe, man. There's so much that happened in this episode that it wouldn't surprise me anymore that in a finale that's maybe 45 minutes long, that a lot happens. And on top of all that, Bo-Katan rides on a fucking Mythosaur.
This was a pretty extended episode for Mando.
Yeah.
This might be one of the longest episodes, 52 minutes, I think. So they filled it too. Like there was a lot going on. So yeah, very excited for next week. One thing I want to throw out there, just a prediction Star Wars in the next 5 years, Barrett. I'm going to say it right now. It is April 12th, 2023. By April 12th, 2028, Star Wars in some on-screen fashion, whether it's TV or movies, will introduce a character named Glup Shitta. They're going to do it, and we're going to lose our fucking shit.
No, they're not.
100%.
They won't have a swear in the name of a character. Won't happen.
Jedo has two T's.
I know, but I don't. Maybe.
5 years, everybody. 5 years.
We're getting closer.
Let us know in the comments. We are getting by the minute. Let us know in the comments below what you thought about this super fucking awesome episode of The Mandalorian and what your predictions are for next week's
and then
finale.
Then come back here next week.
Yes.
Talk about the
11:30 a.m. Pacific live youtube.com/kindoffunny. It'll be me, Barrett, Anthony Carboni, and Sage Ryan giving all of our thoughts. I hope it's good. I hope it puts us in a good place.
I hope it lands on its feet. And even though we had a weird ride throughout the entire season, I hope we leave this season excited for more.
Exactly. But until then, may the Force be with you.
Awesome.